Today on the Dad's Making a Difference podcast, I'm having a conversation with Kevin Hoover. Kevin is a business and a life coach, but specializes as the founder of NextCrest, a consulting company that helps professionals and individuals like us dads navigate burnout and the midlife crisis. And we're going to dive into that today. Kevin's program, Midlife Awakening, helps dads like you and I overcome this obstacle we face from 35 to probably 60. And selfishly, in our conversation today, I ask Kevin, what does it take as a 43-year-old father of two to take the next step and do what I'm called to do? To leave the security of what's comfortable, of what I feel like I need to do or should do, and move on to what I'm called to do and what I want to do. And as you're listening to this, maybe you're on the fence. Maybe there's a change you need to make. Maybe you're facing this midlife crisis right now. You're in your late 30s, mid 40s, and you're not quite sure what to do. Kevin is fantastic. And in this conversation, he gives so much value, so much insight into where we are as men in this time in our lives and how we can come out on the other side as a winner. We can come out in a way where we are in a process of clarity. I appreciate Kevin. I have had few guests who have given as much as Kevin gives in this conversation. I'm very excited for you to hear it. So let's dive in. This episode of the Dad's Making a Difference podcast with Kevin Hoover starts right now. You are listening to the Dad's Making a Difference podcast, the number one podcast for men driven to live a life of significance. Men who want to make a difference in the lives of their families, in their business, and in the world around them. My name is Cam Hall, founder of Fight the Dadbot and leader of the Dad's Making a Difference Mastermind. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. Now, let's dive in. Kevin, welcome to the Dad's Making a Difference podcast. Great to have you on today.
Thanks, Cam. So good to be here.
This is going to be a good one. We know it's going to be a good one because we have had, just before we pressed record, some pretty unusual things happen. My light was falling over. The painting behind you fell off the wall. Man, this is going to be fantastic. We know we're in for a good one.
I agree. I think so. Those are good signs.
Yeah. When the surroundings can't hold up, you know it's good. You know, it's going to be great. But no, in all seriousness, man, I'm excited for this conversation. We were talking a little bit before. Selfishly, I've been really looking forward to this conversation. It speaks close to my heart, to where I'm at in my life. I know many of our men who are listening are in this spot too. And I just appreciate your work and been diving into some of the things that you share about shifting in our lives. And sometimes it's taking risks. Sometimes it's just being calm with making a decision, but that doesn't come naturally. And I know that for you, you have Midlife Awakening and you work with people through that and you made some changes in your life, but that didn't come naturally. It came from a place of necessity. It came from a place of need, a little bit of a response. And I'd love to start there. I'd love you to dive in, Kevin, a little bit about your son, your experience and how that shifted your trajectory as a dad and as a professional.
Sure. I think it's, we have these moments, especially as fathers, that kind of, if you look back through the timeline, no matter where you are in the dad cycle, you can see that was a defining moment. That was a moment where I made a choice to show up or not show up. And, you know, I was showing up for my family for a long time, until my son was four. That's kind of when this happened. But I had a real estate company and I had a coaching business and I was at the soccer game on my phone putting the deal together. And that was for the family so we could keep the house and the cars and the soccer cleats and the summer camps and all that stuff going. And so I look back now and not to be dramatic about it, but I think about that last Saturday that I got to do that. And we're leaving the game. And my son was then three, about to be four. So when I say game, I mean, you know, you can kind of picture what it is, you know, a bunch of three-year-olds chasing blobbing the around the. Yeah. But we were leaving the game and there was a well-positioned ice cream truck as we're leaving the fields. And I thought to myself, what a great business decision to be at a 12 soccer fields where kids are playing soccer and have your ice cream truck there as they're leaving. And my son said, can we get some ice cream? It was 10 in the morning. And I went, my brain went, no, it's too early. We're about to go get lunch. And, but then instinctually I just said, yeah, let's get ice cream. So we got ice cream. It was a great day. And, that was the last time I saw my son play soccer. Well, my son is doing well, but that was the last time that we were on the soccer field. The 1 week later, the very next Saturday, we were in, PICU with a tumor in his abdomen, the size of a grapefruit, and a lot of question marks on what was next. So it really, in a week time, I went from being the dad on the soccer field, putting the deal together, trying to do all the things responsible for the family that was practical, you know, everything we're told to be, I was being that and doing that. Mm-hmm. And then the next Saturday, I'm in this new world of, I don't know how long my son's going to be here. I don't know what we're going to do about it. My business didn't matter anymore. You know, and it was just this sort of sucker punch, a punch in the face of what do we do now? How do we navigate these waters? You know, well, I don't, you know, I want to spoil this story. My son is now in third grade. He's 8 years old. He's about to turn nine. He's doing amazing. He's just a remarkable young man. So it's got a very happy ending, but that was the point of time for me where I went from thinking I was doing everything. And I'll be honest, I didn't really enjoy neither of the businesses that I'd created at that point. Mm-hmm. They afforded me, like you and I, we've spoken this off camera. It afforded me a great lifestyle.
Yeah.
It afforded me, I could explain it easily at a dinner party. What do you do? That question, you know, yeah. I could easily say, you know, I own a real estate company, and people kind of knew what it was. And so once we got to that point in life, you know, the Friday before, we were in PICU, my son was airlifted with total kidney failure, and a tumor. And wow. They didn't know, we didn't have many answers at that point. And because of the nature of life flights, I wasn't going to be able to go on the flight with him. So we negotiated my wife to be on the flight. Mm-hmm. And I went home to pack our clothes, and they were going to fly to a hospital that was 2 hours away from my house. And I was going to pack some clothes and go down and see what was going on. So you can imagine the stress in that moment.
Yeah.
And that drive down was really when I started looking back. In the moment, I didn't realize I was making decisions, but looking back, I now recognize that as decisions were being made for how I was going to show up.
Yeah.
And so 2 hours on a drive with my sister-in-law, and I decided I was going to be courageous for my son. I was going to be positive. I was going to be real. I wasn't going to hide emotion, but I wasn't going to instill fear. I was going to let him see sadness, but not fear. And so I made all these little micro decisions in that drive. And, you know, then you fast forward. So he was in treatment for 2 years. He had, you know, 70 weeks of chemotherapy. He had 44 days of radiation. He had endless, you know, bags of fluid. He had, you know, just the things that little boy went through in 2 years, it's a mountain compared to anything I'll ever experience in my personal life. But there I sat, you know, goofing around, joking around, being a dad, being what I now consider to be a real version of a father. That was the first time I looked back and go,
oh, yeah.
I was the real dad. In that moment, I was a real dad. And it had nothing to do with paying the bills or the bank account or what I do for my occupation or anything like that. And so then once we got through it, the question came, you know, my wife asked this question. I write about it quite a bit. You know, we're sitting in our kitchen. It's July of 2021 and, or 2020, July of 2020. And it's summertime. We've got the doors open. We're cooking food. The kids are playing outside. It was our last day of chemo. We'd finished. Everything was great. You know, we've got the neighbor's kids are over. You can kind of picture the scene.
Yeah.
And my wife looks at me and she goes, what are we supposed to do now? And I was like, that's really when I started asking deeper questions about, you know, what do I want from my life? Mm-hmm. Who do I want to be? You know, because for almost 2 years, we had been the cancer family. We go to treatment every Thursday. If we get 100.4 temperature, we have to go to the ER in an ambulance.
Yeah.
Right. So very mild fever in my son because he's immune compromised at that point. You know, so we're making different decisions, and now that's over. And it's like someone just unplugged the machine. And it's like, what are we supposed to do now? Like, we've gotten so used to this. Yeah. And I think that's really where I started questioning, you know, what I do for money, how I show up, my health habits, how I impact the world, how I impact my world. And so I think going through all of that, just kind of formed this lifestyle theory that I don't ever want to be in crisis. I want to always be awakening to something. And I always want to kind of be growing into the next thing. So I know that's probably a long version of a short story, but that's kind of how I got here.
It's incredible. There's so much there I want to dive into and I want to unpack, but you said something that just right away hit me, and that was stepping into being a real dad. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by stepping into the role of a real dad?
Well, I think, you know, I grew up in an era of rub dirt on it.
Yeah.
You know, don't let them see you cry, shake it off, walk it off. You know, I'm an athlete. So those were all said on a weekly basis around my house. You know, are you injured or are you hurt?
Yeah.
Right. And you know, I can remember my dad at a very young age saying that, you know, when I was playing soccer and baseball and basketball, you know, it was like, are you injured or are you hurt? And my little 9-year-old brain trying to figure out which is the case, because I feel this way, but I now have to decipher between pain and actual injury. And so that was kind of generation I grew up in. So when I say real dad, I mean, for me at this point, it's having a connection with my son that allows him to be okay being okay. It allows him to be okay being not okay. It allows him to see dad crying and scared and hungry and not knowing what to do and asking questions and being directed. You know, doctors came in all day long telling me what I should be doing. And so him having a front row seat, watching dad take orders, so to speak. And so I think when I say being a real dad, it really is navigating in a very small window of time, a lot of circumstance that normally would take, for me at least, it would take years to show him dad reacting to all these different scenarios. And my son got to see it in a matter of months. So being a real dad to me, I say that because that was the first time I felt like I was being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It's the first time I felt like I was being courageous. I was being tough. I was being tender, that I was being real, that I was being an educator, that I was being a guide, that I was being positive energy, all at the same time. And I'd never felt that before. And I don't know that I'll ever feel it again, to be honest with you. I feel pieces of that at moments. Yeah. But it was in that moment where I just felt it all at once. And I felt empowered as a dad in that moment to inspire my son to create his own positive world. And I'm convinced no one can ever tell me, you know, I'm very spiritual and I do believe in, you know, I believe in God and those things like that. But no one can ever tell me that my son didn't get through that by not having positive energy around him and him believing that it was going to be okay. And that it's okay to cry and fight.
Yeah.
It's okay to be weakened, but still remain in strength. And so I think that's really where it hit home about the kind of dad that I want to be. And, you know, from then moving forward, I kind of model my decisions, my behavior on those moments of, you know, it's okay to show vulnerability and weakness, but it's not okay to stay there. What you do next is a thing he watches, you know? And so that's kind of what I mean by that. And it was just it was a rebirthing moment for me as a dad. It really was.
Yeah. It's powerful stuff, man. Like I think about, I can't imagine going through that. You know, I've got kids, you know, I think about my son when he was 4, if like navigating that complexity. And then you think about that barbecue, you know, 2 years later, you know, you're outside and it's like, what do we do now after we've been living in this time of just probably just heightened awareness about everything, a little bit of anxiety about what's to come. And now you're like, what's next? And so you made a decision. You didn't go back to real estate and all of that, did you?
No. It felt like that would have been a waste.
Yeah.
You know, and not going back to real estate, but going back to the way that I was doing real estate, which was the only way I know. I'd been in it for 10 years, you know? So I think that was the question that we asked next. It's like, you know, it would be a shame to having gone through what we went through and come out on the positive side, because so many people don't come out, you know, as we did. I said, it would be a shame to go back and just, you know, continue life as it were. Yeah. You know what? I mean, we had plenty of good times, plenty of good things to hold on to, but what else can we do? You know, what else is possible?
Wow. How old were you? Do you mind me asking, how old were you when you were going through this with your son?
No, I don't mind at all. I became a dad later in life. I became a father at 41. And so I was 45 when I was going through this. So I was in my mid 40s. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting time of life as well. You know, as Be a little selfish. Now, I told you, I warned you before we press record, I was going to be a bit selfish and ask you some questions.
I
turned 43 this month. And in your mid-40s, you start to experience something that I've never experienced before. Maybe for the last, I'm going to be honest with you, this has been ongoing in my brain, in my heart, in my conversations with my wife and my household. I told you 7 months has been like real conversation, but this has probably been almost 2 years, man. Like this has been... Yeah. Like year after year, what's next? What's next? Am I called to do this work? Mm-hmm. Am I fulfilling my purpose and the purpose for my life and leaning into my unique mechanism, my call, like my unique skill and unique ability going to my job every day? Mm-hmm. And so I'm navigating that. And I think a lot of men get into their 40s and they start to have this moment and they mm-hmm. look at this breaking point between, am I going to continue to do this in my line of work? It's, am I going to continue to do this to chase a pension? Or am I going to continue to do this just so I can retire in 13 years and call it a day? Like, or am I going to take a step, take a leap and start a new adventure? But it's scary. Your midlife awakening. We're going to talk about midlife crisis is what I'm getting at here. Because I think at that time, it's not really a midlife crisis. I think it's this point in time when we just start to think differently about our lives, right? Mm-hmm. So why is this a problem? Why do we get here? Why do we navigate this as men who are listening to this podcast thinking, maybe I'm in my late 30s and I'm having that. Maybe I'm in my late 40s. Why do we get here?
I love this question, first of all, and I hate generalizing the answer, but I'm going to generalize a little bit just for context. And then I want to go into sort of my experience with it and then talk about what really is happening behind the scenes. Cause I do work with a lot of parents in this age group, and the midlife years, you know, we've got to clarify, it really starts at around 35, mm-hmm. you know, it has nothing to do with your actual midpoint of living. It's that 35 to 60 window where we've kind of built this thing and we have responsibilities. Our overhead is a little higher, you know, with kids, with a mortgage, cars, vacation, and we see health comes into play, where there may be some challenges that come up that we need some extra, you know, attention for. So everything is coming our way, but then we also have this barrier of sort of graduating and retiring by 65. So you're thinking, well, I've got about 20 years left before I've got to have this figured out, or I don't know what's going to happen. But if I could peel that back a little bit and give you a little perspective, you know, you're about to be 43. You know, you look like you're reasonable health. You look like you probably do some exercising. You probably don't sit on the couch eating Twinkies all day long. You look like you probably take care of your body, at least to a reasonable effect. It wouldn't be drastic for us to consider that you've got another 45 or 50 years left in your life. Would that be reasonable?
Yeah.
I think that would be reasonable. Yeah. All right. So then when you say, okay, well, I've got that kind of time left, why am I boiling what I do for money down to just the next 15?
Yeah.
Or the next 13 or the next 20, when I've got 45 or 50 more years left, you know, do I want to spend half that time just getting through it? Mm-hmm. Or do I want to spend that time doing what lights me up, what makes me happy, what makes an impact, what does all these things? And what I found to be true is that if someone asked me a question like you just asked me, I look them in the eye and I can look you in the eye right now and I can confidently say, you already know the answer.
Yeah.
You already have answered that question for yourself.
Yeah.
You're looking for validation out here in me and the world. And so give me some clue, give me some sign, universe, God, spirit, give me something that says this is worth the risk. It's going to be okay. And when I get enough of those signs or I get fed up enough with the other thing, then I'll jump. And that's ultimately what the midlife crisis is.
Yeah.
It's I reach a point, a boiling point, a tipping point of I'm fed up with this over here so much that I'm willing to risk it going away and taking a chance on this because I just can't do it anymore. And for some people, it's I had a heart attack. For some people, it's my kid got sick. For some people, it's I bought a sports car and that didn't fix anything.
Yeah.
For some people, it's my marriage dissolved. For some people, it's my kids no longer talk to me. You know, but that boiling point comes no matter what you do. And so if you're looking at your life and saying, well, I'm doing this thing and it's really good and I like it. It's not that I hate the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that I'm feeling drawn now to this other thing. And
so true.
Yeah. And so when you think about that, you say, well, what creates that? It's not that this thing is bad and this thing is good. Like it's not a this versus. What we're talking about is we as people, especially as dads, we evolve. And when we deny our evolution in interests, in spirituality, in our health, and when we deny that evolution, we reach this point of crisis, because now we have two identities that are now conflicting. And you're holding on so tight to the old you that the new you can't even breathe. This comfort and tradition and responsibility and practicality, all that's over here. And you're holding on to that with white knuckles. And over here is the new liberated, free, can work in this business for the next 40 years with no problem. But we can't see the 5 years from now. So that it's because it's very scary. So that's kind of how the crisis comes about. And most people who make a decision to jump from one to the next is because they get so fed up with the back and forth. They say, screw it, I'll take a chance.
See what happens. Man. You know, I didn't think it was possible. You said about, you know, catching your breath and making a decision. I didn't think it was possible to actually get punched in the gut through a Zoom call, but but you just did so in the most caring way possible. Now, like a lot of what you just described is honestly, personally, and I'm guys listening to this, you can put this in your own personal context, I'm sure. But as Kevin's talking, I'm putting this in my context and it's challenging me right now because Kevin, I feel the way you just described. It's not that this thing that I'm doing is bad.
Right.
It's okay. Could I do it? I could do it. Am I good at it? I'm good at it. But I'm not getting the fulfillment from it that I once did. And I start to see these other opportunities come up and I'm like, do I jump? Do I jump? And you mentioned this, but it's almost like you wait for someone else to make the decision for you and just say go. Or unfortunately, some people are waiting for a crisis and they can use it as maybe an excuse to jump ship or to make a change. Oh, this happened, so now I can make this change and people will understand around me and I won't have to answer the questions about why did you walk away from this? Like for my instance, Cam, you could be a principal of a school one day. Why would you step away right now? Because I don't know if I want that. You know, like, yeah. So I appreciate your willingness to say how it is, because I think that's where I'm at right now. For guys who are in this spot, we're recording this. It's the beginning of 2024, a time where a lot of people will make resolutions or goals or say this year is going to be different. Now, this is coming out, you know, a month or two later, but this is still a time where guys are looking at this year saying it's going to be different. Is this a good thing or a bad thing to sit down, make goals, build a vision board, to have these aspirations if they're not willing to make that jump?
Yes, it's a good thing. It doesn't mean it's the right thing. It means it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a process that I subscribe to, a process of clarity. And it's a four-part process. The first part is exactly what you just described. Make the vision board. Yeah. Who do you want to be? And that's the fun part. That's the real easy part to say, I want a private chef. I want a Lamborghini. I want the mansion. I want a vacation in Vail every Christmas. What, you know, that's the fun part. That's the easy part, you know? And so that is step one. So that's why it's a good thing, because that is step one. The second step is to identify, where are you now in relation to all the things you just put on your vision board? How close are you to having the whatever you want? And this is where I think people lie to themselves and they say, it's not that bad. I'm not that broke. I'm not that out of shape. I'm not that unhealthy. I don't eat that poorly. And so part two is really where we become really deceptive of ourselves. And if you want to know how far you can run, you get out and run and you measure the distance. That's how you know how far you can run today. Well, that's what's happening in part two. You're measuring how far you have to run to connect your vision board to reality. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So part two is where we really, we get into this deception mode of saying we're not that bad, because no one wants to admit, hey, I've fallen off the edge there. You know, I got a lot of work to do. And then part three is really where you overcome and you decide how we're going to do this. What obstacles do I see in my way? You know, and for people, you know, I was there. For people like you, it might be like, the obstacle in my way is I like this job. I don't love it. It provides me and my family a very quality lifestyle that we've grown accustomed to. Yeah. But I don't see myself being fired up by going to work for the next 13 years doing this thing, and the next rung on the ladder is not something I'm sure I want.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So these are all obstacles. This is really the where are you now part. And then as you identify the obstacles are like, maybe explain to my wife what's going to happen when I leave and go over here and do this new thing.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
maybe explain to my kids. Maybe we don't have, we have a little lesser of a car. We take a lesser vacation for a couple of years until this thing gets going. So it really is what obstacles are in my way. And then the tricky part to the fourth part of the process of clarity is you realize that clarity is not a destination. It is a process. So part four is do the whole thing all over again.
Yeah.
And you're like constantly that. In a state of gaining clarity. And so you never arrive. And once you get to that realization of saying, hey, I don't have to be clear. Once you're clear on this thing, you're unclear on 9 other things.
Yeah.
So once you, let's say for hypothetically, and I'm going to kind of put this out as perhaps manifesting that this will happen in the next 12 or 18 months for you. Let's say you do leave your job and you create this thing where you're a world-class podcast host and you've got books and multimedia going out into the world that are really affecting fathers and really affecting the way that we operate and the way the world perceives us. You know, I call it the Al Bundy syndrome, if you're familiar with Married with Children from years and years ago.
Yeah.
Kind of the oafish dad in the media, that's who we're portrayed as, you know. And so if you say, wow, okay, if I can see the end of that, it makes it easier to jump now, but I've got to go through this process. Creating the vision board is good, but it's not the only thing I need to do. I need to really decide, like, where am I now? How much runway do I have to make this leap? How much runway do I think I need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then what are the obstacles that are going to come in my way? And then I'm okay with constantly doing that over and over and over again. And I think that's really where you, this time of year especially, people miss, because they make the vision board and then they sit back for between the time of recording this and the time of this broadcasting and going live. Most people will have done nothing.
Yeah.
They will have done zero. And some people will have done something. And some people will have done it all.
Yeah.
And you've got to decide which category you're going to fit into. And if you've got 2 months out of your year where you've made zero progress, that's not the vision board's fault. That's your fault. You're not making decisions. You're not making action. You're not getting out and seeing how far you can actually run. You're saying, yeah, I could probably run a mile.
Probably. Right?
Probably. Yeah. If I had to.
Yeah.
Well, what if you want to? Mm-hmm. What do you do because you want to do it? Not because when you have to do it, that's one thing. And like, just like my story, I did a lot of things because I have to. Now I'm doing things because I want to.
Yeah. There's a huge change.
But it feels much better to do it because I want to than it did to do it when I had to. The lesson happened when I had to. Now the skill happens when I want to. That makes any sense?
Absolutely makes sense. Hey guys, I wanted to take a moment and talk about our community of DMD brothers in the DMD Mastermind. We are men who help each other to stay focused and intentional in our pursuits of personal, professional, physical, financial, emotional, and spiritual growth. We are a community of men who bring courage, wisdom, and transparency to unfiltered conversations that challenge us to be more impactful men, to be dads making a difference. We do this through our online and in-person events where men come together to speak into each other's lives and then turn around and do the deep work to create change in their families, in their businesses, and in the community around them. If you are wondering if this community might be right for you, you can find more information on the DMD Mastermind, and you can also book a call directly with me at dmdmastermind.com. Now, let's get back to our show.
I'm reading a book right now where that language is used. And maybe it's not have to and want to, but it's need to and want to. I'm doing this because I need to. I need to do this. I need to pay the bills. I need to have security. I need to carry on this maybe perception that other people have about us and our lifestyle versus I want to. I'm doing this because I want to. I want to have an impact. I want to grow. I love that it's midlife awakening, and you use awakening. You were talking about this before, about a growth process that we go through. Mm-hmm. We talk about growth a lot on here. I am in this conflict because I truly am committed to growth, or I say that I am. And yet in an area, and this happens for other guys too, in an area which would take an entire commitment to personal growth, by taking a risk and growing through it, I'm pushing it away. So I can say I'm committed to growth in these little areas, but you're challenging me right now, Kevin, because if I really do want to grow, why wouldn't I do this? Why wouldn't I go after what I want to do, what I want to be, the impact I want to have? Right? Man, I'm thinking about a lot right now.
Good.
You
can I put another layer into it? Sorry, I didn't mean to
interrupt. Absolutely. Please do.
So let me, this is what I use my personal and my son. And I tell my son's 8, he's about to be 9. So we keep in context the language that I might use with him versus the language I'm using with you. Yeah. But we talk about this a lot, and I ask him what he sees in me. Who is your dad to you? You know, that's a very important question to ask your kids, you know? And so how old are your kids?
My son is 9 and my daughter is going to be 12 in a couple weeks.
So. Okay, great. So they're at a wonderful age where they understand what's going on a little bit. They know what dad's doing. They ask questions. They're inquisitive about what dad does.
Yeah.
They know a little bit, but here's how I have to think in my age is that I don't want my son to suffer. I especially don't want him to suffer through work. It doesn't mean he has to work in exactly what he's passionate and purposeful in. It doesn't mean he has a dream job. Like, it doesn't mean that. Yeah. It just means that I don't want him to feel like he can't make decisions based on desires. I want him to take the risks. So what do I have to do? I have to model that for him. I can't be complacent in my comfortable 9-to-5 job and look at my kids and go, go for it.
Right.
They don't hear go for it. They see dad being comfortable doing the same old thing, complaining about the same person at work, the same job, the same salary, the same vacation. They see dad doing all that. So what is the best thing that I can show them and model for them? It's like, let me show my son dad taking calculated chances and failing and winning again and then failing and then winning again and then micro failing and then macro winning and then macro failing and micro, you know, it's like all these little nuances, but what the conversations over the last 2-3 years that have happened with modeling that behavior for him and figuring it out and being vocal about when it's a tough day at work and, hey, I don't know where my clients are coming from anymore. And now what he sees is he sees a figure it out mentality, even on things like, you know, he got this little big wheel kind of bicycle thing for the holidays and it's not working the way he wants it. And so, dad, this isn't working. I was like, well, what's wrong? It's 4 days old. And now he's going in and trying to figure it out. And I think it's because I'm showing him me figuring it out and he's modeling that behavior. So the perspective would be, if you want to empower your children to go after their dreams, you have to show them you going after yours. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. I think about how this relates to two terms that I've had bouncing around in my brain lately when I'm around my family. And it's, am I operating from a scarcity mindset or an abundance mindset? And I feel that if I'm operating from I need to do this, it's scarcity. And I want my kids to grow up with an abundance mindset. And how am I modeling an abundance mindset if I'm still in the need to?
Yeah.
And so, man, I'm glad that you go another layer. You know, I love these deeper layers that you keep challenging on because for us men in this community, in this Dad's Making Difference community, and I think about my Fight the Dad Bod community, the guys who are wanting to be healthier, so much of this relates in a way that we just need to be honest with where we are at, who we are, what we actually want, and what we're doing. You mentioned three people that by in between this recording and it going live, won't do anything, might do some things, might do it all. Those are three very distinct type of people. What are some of the, in your experience, what are some of the indicators, if somebody's listening to this, like, oh no, which person am I? Which they might already know. What are some of the indicators that you've seen in those types of personalities and those types of people?
Okay. So I'm very careful with my words, but I want to say that if you don't know which person you are, you're the first. You're the person who won't do anything.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's not about doing the thing external. It's about knowing yourself well enough that I know exactly where I fit in any circumstance, in any, I know exactly who I'm showing up as. And sometimes I show up as the I haven't done anything guy. There's nothing wrong with that. That's okay. Right. But if your question is, I'm not sure which one I am, you're the first one. You're the didn't do anything. Hands down. And you can like it, you can hate it, you can be indifferent about it, but it doesn't change the truth. when you know yourself well enough to know exactly which part you're in, and if you think you're in the I've done it all category, when I'm in the I've done it all category, I then go, my goals weren't big enough.
Yeah, I haven't done it all. Yep.
Yeah. What's next? Yeah. That's that process of clarity. So I did everything I wanted to do for this whole year in 3 weeks. Wonderful. You phoned it in when you made those goals. You didn't ask more questions around those goals. You know, a prime example, you know, I'm on a big health journey right now. I turned 50 in March, and I love food, and I love, you know, having nice dinners and things like that. And I thought, well, what should I do for my 50th birthday? This is back in August. I said, well, what should I do? And my wife and I were talking. I was like, oh, let's go out to a nice dinner. And then I was like, God, how boring is that? How many years am I going to do that? Yeah. Right. I said, well, what if I did something else? So I spent weeks, and I was just like looking at it. And so I was in my office one day, and I signed up for an ultra marathon.
Wow.
Ran 0 miles so far. well, at that time.
Yeah.
But I was like, what if 2 weeks after I turned 50, I ran a 50K, 50 kilometers in a race?
Yeah.
You know, what if I did that? You know, and so, and I was like, oh, that's crazy. Cause I always said, I've run half marathons before, and I've always said that I will never run a marathon. It just doesn't seem fun. It's not interesting to me. But all of a sudden, a more than a marathon now seems very interesting for some reason. So I signed up for the race, and I start training, and I got to the point where I was running a half marathon every weekend, pretty much.
Wow.
And then started getting hurt, started getting injured. Right. And so it was like, I was the guy who was doing everything, doing it all. And yeah, then I quickly went from that guy to the guy who couldn't do anything because I was injured, like physically injured, you know, going back to the, am I hurt or injured? I was injured. Right.
Yeah.
And I learned more in that process of having this incredibly intimidating goal, starting to train for it, starting to do it, getting injured. And now I'm getting the point where I'm starting to go back into that high level training mode. I learned more in that window of time than I would have if I'd never decided to go after this. It's not about the race.
Yeah.
It's about training for the race. So for you, it's not about doing the thing, you know. And here's what we learn about goals is, let's say you decided tomorrow that this is going to be the path you're going on.
Yeah.
You're not going to be stupid about it. You're going to create a runway. You're going to be responsible in the time, the overlaps, and you're going to be very calculated. You're a smart guy. Like, you're not going to just unplug one thing and hope the other one plugs in somewhere.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that. So let's say that you start that process, and 2 years from now, what's actually happening in life is far bigger than your current self today could even fathom.
Right.
Like, you can't set that goal until you start training for it.
Yeah.
So that's really the magic of the whole thing is, like, you know, if you're saying, which guy am I? You're the first guy, and that's okay. That's okay. You're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you. You don't need fixing. But just be honest about where you are. And the reason you're the first guy in that moment is because you haven't done enough work in there of yourself to know where you fit at any given moment.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting better and better about, in that three person scenario, of knowing where I fit. Right. I know in this ultra marathon pursuit that I've done the work. I haven't done all the work. In fact, I don't know that I will ever have done all the work, but I have done enough work to know where I stack up against myself. And I've not done nothing, but I haven't done everything. And that's where I'm at. And I want to continue being in that zone. I never want to fall. I never want to grow. I never want to feel like I've run every race. I always want to be in that zone. And so I think when we really embrace that and say, wow, okay, you know, Cam, for you, if you start training in 18 months and you call me back, and you say, hey, Kevin, I've been training in this new thing for 18 months and you won't believe what happened. I didn't see that coming. It would, like, that's what happens 90% of the time when people just start training for the big thing. Our brains today can't put together a goal that's big enough for our possibility until we start doing it. And then once we start doing it, we start collecting these little pieces of the puzzle and meeting the people. And it's like, okay, wow. You know, I did an experiment a few years ago where I started a podcast for a very small amount of time. I was only going to do like 7 episodes. My criteria for the podcast was, I'm only going to invite people on that I fully believe those people will say, no, I will not be on your podcast with no audience. So I was calling, like, New York Times bestselling authors, you know, people that started big, big companies.
Yeah.
Just trying to, and everyone said yes. Huh. Everyone said yes. And that was my first dip into like, okay, wow, it's just the act of doing it shows you what you're capable of and what's possible. And you go back and you look at some of those decisions we make, and it wasn't the goal that was the goal. It was the training that became a bigger goal than we could even fathom at the time.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that.
That's the zest of life. That's what really keeps you out of the crisis mode. And that is the awakening. When you realize that, and you're like, wow, okay, at 50, I'm going to have a nice dinner with my family. That'll be just good enough. Or I'm not going to have a nice dinner and wine because now I'm not drinking and I'm not eating those kind of foods. I'm actually training because I'm an athlete at 50.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, I'm running 32 miles. So I've got to, you know, it's like there's just a different way of thinking.
So good. Man, I love that you say that, and the focus on the process, because part of the reason I think that in our home, I've been beating myself up a little bit is because I love the process. I've got a vision board. I've got my models here. Know your why, aim for growth, take ownership. Like, I've got things around that are just reminders to me of why I'm doing what I'm doing and who I am. But I went back to this goal setting exercise I did with a group of men called Come As You Will Be in 2023. We did it. We started in 2021. And so it was by the end of 2023, this is where I want to be personally, professionally, financially, spiritually, and intellectually. And professionally, it said by December, 2023, I've resigned from my position. I'm doing this full time and I'm not there yet. But my wife was like, but Cam, like, you talk about a runway. And I think that's really important. And not just like not having a plan. She's like, look at the runway you've built. Look at where we are now financially to where we were when I started that, because I had a vision in mind of where I needed to be. We're debt free. We have a runway that started. We're doing these things where I wasn't in 2021. She's like, look how much further ahead we're doing. Like, we're joking about the mess in my office and like you're in remodel mode and we're remodeling the house. But a big win for us is that we haven't gone into debt to do any of this. And I might be disappointed because of at this point in my life, I should be doing something else. But I think about the process, what I've learned about myself and what I'm able to do when I really get into it. And I think for so many men, we don't know because we don't really get into it. We just stay surface level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We just stay surface level. Is there some things that you see when you're talking and working with men, specifically men, most of our listeners are men, but things that you see that keep guys from going deep and just keep them at the surface level?
Yeah. We're trained to be that way. Mm. You know, we're brought up that way, you know, suffer through it. Silent suffering is probably the biggest problem in midlife, middle-aged men than anything, you know, people like us that are, you know, hey, hate your job, but stay with it. Don't quit. Mm-hmm. People are depending on you. That's your job to do that job that you hate. You know, I think we're very much trained to not ask that next question, just to deal with whatever it is. And, you know, my wife and I, we've been in therapy for a long time as a preventative measure, as we evolve and as we grow, especially going through the situations that we've been through, you know, challenging, you know, PTSD and depression, anxiety, all those are in the wake of cancer. That's what happens to parents. So we've been in there and we did this exercise where I'm shown a picture and I have to describe to her what to draw and then vice versa. And we trade. And so she's describing me what to draw and I'm drawing and doing my thing. And then I'm describing to her and she's doing her thing. And at the end of it, I think I had drawn a ladybug and she had drawn a lion. And that we use that as our communication words. When I feel like she's not getting what I'm trying to say, I say, I need you to be a ladybug right now, you know, or she says, I need you to be a lion right now. But what we learned from that exercise, that our therapist said at the end of it, she said, Kevin, how many questions did you ask when you were drawing your ladybug? I was like, I don't know. And she said, one, you asked one question.
Wow.
And she asked my wife, she said, how many questions do you think you asked? She was like, I don't know. She said, 28. You asked 28 questions. And so it's that for me, that is a complete, that is a mirror of how men are raised and trained to, if I have to ask questions, then I'm perceived as weak. I'm perceived as not knowing. I'm perceived as indecisive, as not the alpha. All these things that we don't want to be as men. So I won't ask questions. I'll just figure it out. And keep going, you know? And in that moment I was like, okay, you know, I'm okay asking questions. I don't think I have a problem with that. Why was I not, you know, I was just assuming this line and it ended up fine. You know, it kind of looked like a ladybug, you know, but could it have been better if I had asked four more questions or five more questions or 20 more questions? Yeah. Could it have been better? And the answer is yes, but I'm not conditioned that way. And so I think that's an example of how men generally navigate the world is I'm not asking my resources around me for advice. You know, if you want to leave your career and go to a new career, you probably know someone who's done that. You probably know someone in your town, on your street that has done that at some point. Why are we not asking that person questions? Why are we not saying, hey, come over for coffee? You know, I'd love to buy you coffee and ask you a couple questions. Here's what I'm thinking about doing, you know, like. So I do think that that's something that we're trained as men not to do, is to seek help from our resources, from our communities. You know, the community you've built is a great pool of, it's probably, you know, it's an exception to the rule as far as probably what happens. People are probably asking these questions amongst people in the group. And I think that's very refreshing, as much needed, but most men will suffer in silence as opposed to vocally being vulnerable or saying, I don't know what to do, or saying, I need help, or I can't do this on my own, or I don't like that this is the life. I don't like that that's it, and that's how things are. I want it to be this way over here. You know, so I think that was something that really was tough for me to grab onto. You know, we had to ask for help when my son had cancer because we had no choice, and I hated it. I hated that we had to ask for help. But I got really good at it. There was no choice. So now it's like, you know, I'm revamping what I do in a lot of ways, and I'm looking at people and who do I know? It's really liberating to say, who do I know?
Yeah.
What do I need to do? Yeah. Who do I need to meet Cam? Yeah. Cause yeah. Cam and I, you know, like, let me get out there and find the people, you know? And yeah. I think that's what, if men did that more, I think you would find that this world is not as lonely as we perceive it to be, as dads, as men. Not only that, but there's a lot of clues out there that say, I'm not the dumbest person on the planet. I'm not, you know, I'm relatively intelligent. I can work relatively hard some of the time, you know, but everything becomes possible at that point. Yeah. And that's really where you want to get to, is what else is possible? You know, for me, it's like, if you don't ask the next question, you kind of just draw whatever you have. But if I can ask three more questions, that exercise was very profound for me, because I was like, in my business, I'm not asking questions. In my pursuit of being an excellent father or being an available father, am I asking questions of those good dads around me? Yeah. Am I watching them? Not from a tell me what to do standpoint, but tell me what to do better. You know? So yeah,
I love that. That's a good challenge for anybody who's listening. Like, who's around you? Who's in your circle? Who do you trust? Who's something? And it doesn't have to be somebody you know already. It could be somebody you just hear about and like, oh, that's interesting. Can I have their contact? We don't want, as men, we don't want to reach out cold to somebody and say, hey, you want to go for coffee? But sometimes that's what it takes. And sometimes it's making us a little uncomfortable in the small ways so that we can get uncomfortable in the big ways so that we can get to where we want to be. So I appreciate for sharing that. Man, I could continue to go on and on, but we're running short on time. Kevin,
same.
Right now, what is one area as a dad that you are excited about, or you're diving into an area of growth that you're learning more about yourself?
I'm excited to dive into communication, how I communicate verbally and non-verbally, being very selective with my yeses and my nos, being very intentional about my yeses and my nos. You know, dad, can you throw the football? I want that answer to be yes all the time. I never want to be too tired, too distracted, too much going on at work, too much. And I never want to be a no to that question. Right. And so I'm being very intentional about my communication as a dad. Like, I'm very excited about how I'm growing in that area. I got a long way to go, but just the awareness around it is the correction in a lot of ways, you know, where, you know, my dad always came home and threw the football with me in the yard before he even got out of his suit, you know? And I was like, and I look back now as an adult, like, that time meant the world to me. That was everything, you know? So I'm really looking at my communication, is especially around the answers to questions that are yes, no questions. Am I saying no when a good dad would say yes? Mm. Or am I saying yes when a good dad would say no? and just having a pause in there when the question comes in, having a 3-second pause, conjuring that good dad. That may be a book, in fact, the good dad inside of, you know, conjuring that good dad and saying, what would he answer in this situation despite the circumstances? So that's really what I'm excited about.
I love that. Such a great goal. Thanks for being vulnerable and diving and talking about that. Kevin, if somebody wants to connect with you to learn more about Midlife Awakening and the work that you're doing, where can they do that?
The best place is my website, mynextcrest.com. I'm on all social media platforms. Instagram is a Midlife Awakening, Next Crest under all the others. And those are the best ways, but please reach out. Anything. I'm an open book. I don't keep any secrets, and I don't, you know, I give away more than I charge for. So if you got a question, ask it. I'll answer it. I will.
Amazing. Well, Kevin, I appreciate you being here. You've just packed full value, lots to think about in this episode. This has got to be one of my favorites, man. Like, I've interviewed a lot of people, and I got to be honest with you, I very rarely feel connected to a guest where I can just be open and honest and have a conversation that I think is so impactful. So thank you so much for taking time away from your family and being here today.
Oh, thank you. It's easy to do when you have authentic people on the other end.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining me today on this episode of the Dad's Making a Difference podcast. I hope you found value in today's show. And if it made a positive impact on you, please share it with someone you know, leave a 5-star review, and subscribe so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. And if you are a father listening to this right now, who is driven to build a life of significance, to truly make a difference in the life of your family, in your business, and in the community around you, go to dmdmastermind.com to learn more about the Dad's Making a Difference Mastermind, a mastermind group for fathers that provides men with the skills, the connections, the accountability, the proven steps, and the brotherhood to truly become a dad making a difference. I'm Cam Hall. Thank you for spending time with me today, and I will see you on the next episode of the DMD Podcast.